Welcome to the Dog Talk Show. I'm your host, Julie Forbes. You're listening to Alternative Talk, 1150 AM. Oh, do we have a show today, Eric? It's a doozy.
All right. I love doozies.
Yep.
You don't hear that sentence too often.
I'm going to have laser focus today because I have so much to say in the first segment. And then we're going to have Dr. Jean Dodds on the show starting in segment two. Mm-hmm. And she is the founder of hemopet.org, as well as the Rabies Challenge Trust. And we're going to be talking to her about all of the different things that she has done over the past couple plus decades in this field, as far as thyroid testing, rabies vaccinosis, doing research to change the standard for the amount of time that needs to pass before pets are required to get their boosters. In Washington state, it's every 3 years. In some states, still, it's annual. And they're doing research to prove that dogs and cats don't need the vaccines as frequently to help prevent the adverse reactions that happen from the vaccines. And she's done work with Greyhound Rescue, and she's got a lot of stuff going on. So I'm really looking forward to talking with her. We're going to bring her on the show in the second segment. Before we talk to Dr. Dodds, I have a couple of announcements, and then I'm going to kind of share a story about Remy, who I think I've talked about on the show, who is how Darcy and I actually met Dr. Dodds. We had a German Shepherd, we still have her, that had a reaction to a rabies vaccine. So I'm going to talk about Remy. But first off, I want to thank the show sponsors, because this show would not be on the air without the support from our sponsors. And I just want to give a special thank you today and acknowledge all of the Dog Talk Show sponsors. The Natural Pet Pantry has been a sponsor of the Dog Talk Show since we started. And it's been a little over 2 years now, and their support has been extremely important to me. And their products are also products that I am extremely excited about. They make locally made raw and cooked food diets for both dogs and cats. And I've certainly talked about nutrition a lot on this show over the years, and they make a great food. It's a great service that they or product that they provide for people in the area. It's the Natural Pet Pantry, and their website is naturalpetpantry.com. Also want to thank Invisible Fence Northwest for their support, invisiblefencenw.com. It's getting to be springtime. Actually, technically is springtime, although, well, yeah, this is spring weather. Rainy and cold.
I was going to say, if you
we have
and your
seen
dog
some sun though.
Both own a slicker. It's still a great day.
Yeah, it is a great day still to go for a walk. But they really provide safety and freedom at the same time for pets, both dogs and cats, with their indoor and outdoor solutions. So check them out, invisiblefencenw.com, and one of our newer sponsors, All the Best Pet Care. Their website is allthebestpetcare.com. They've been providing the healthiest food, treats, and toys for dogs and cats in the Seattle and Eastside area for 25 years now. And they have a really wonderful stand in all of their stores that they will not stock anything that has byproducts or any of the no-no grains like corn, wheat, and soy. They just won't carry any of those products that are going to be harmful to your pet. So you know that whatever you buy from their stores is going to be safe because of their commitment. Allthebestpetcare.com. I have a seminar coming up, actually, at the Lake City store, April 14th, Thursday, 7:30 to 9 p.m. at the Lake City store, Effective Communication with Your Dog. This is a free seminar that I'm giving at the Lake City store, All the Best Pet Care. Registration is free, but we do ask that you RSVP because space is limited. And if you'd like to register, you can email lakecity@allthebestpetcare.com, or you can call them 206-524-0199, or you can go to the Lake City store in person and register that way as well. Allthebestpetcare.com. You can also find out more information about this event and other events that they hold at their locations in the area as well. Allthebestpetcare.com. Also, Chemly Electric has been a sponsor of the show since we started as well a couple years ago. And their website is chemlyelectric.com. They do both residential and commercial electrical contracting, and they're great. They are a big dog-loving company, and I've worked with the owners and their dog and some of the staff dogs, and they're wonderful. So if you're in the market for an electrician, I know these owners, and they're really wonderful. Chemly Electric, K-E-M-L-Y, electric.com. Another event, the Assistance Dog Club of Puget Sound is hosting a 2011 conference. It doesn't have to be a mountain. Simple solutions for service dog issues. It's Saturday, June 18th, 8:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Inn at Gig Harbor in Gig Harbor, Washington. Conference will open with a presentation on vaccinations. That's appropriate for today's guest. Parasite control, lumps and bumps. And the afternoon presentation will be easy to fix behavior issues and what problems are really red flags. And this is put on by the Assistance Dog Club of Puget Sound. So certainly anybody who has an assistance dog or lives with somebody who works with an assistance dog, or perhaps is a trainer, and really based off of these topics, is a great, great conference for anybody really with dogs. So it's open to the public. There will also be small group discussions during lunch on several different issues related to service dogs. You can go to www.dogsaver.org/ADC to register, and I've posted this information on the Dog Talk Show homepage as well, which is www.dogtalkshow.com. All of our past shows are archived on that website, dogtalkshow.com. You can also listen to any of our 109 now shows on iTunes. You can download us for free as an audio podcast. So then you can take us with you as you're walking your dog and listen to us that way too. So, as I said earlier, we are going to be talking with, starting in the second segment, Dr. Gene Dodds, who is doing a lot of work and a lot of various things. She has the website hemopet.org, as well as rabieschallengetrust.org, and those links are also on the Dog Talk Show homepage as well. But how I met Gene Dodds was actually through Dr. Michael Fox, who I adore and who we've had on the show a few times, and whose interview, one of my favorite and I think most important shows that we've ever done, I'm going to be playing that interview with Dr. Fox next week. So you can look forward to that next week, next Wednesday from 2 to 3. He talks about in that interview the relationship between prescription diet, food companies, and vet schools, and shed some light on that world in a very entertaining and spicy way. He's a really, really wonderful interview. And I reached out to Dr. Fox when Remy, a German Shepherd that was a candidate as a service dog for in Darcy's service dog training program, and her company is called Healing Allies, H-E-E-L-I-N-G, allies. com. And Remy is a German Shepherd. She's about 2 years old, and she was stray, and we Darcy found her in a rescue group as she gets all of her dogs from a rescue or shelter situation. And so she, after she passed some initial health tests to be considered as a candidate for a service dog, she was vaccinated for rabies because we had no records for her, and it's sort of standard. And I think it was the next day, she spiked a fever of 105 degrees and was wobbly, falling over, just wasted from the vaccine. And we were like, oh my gosh, I mean, it's common, I think, for dogs to not feel good after the vaccine and maybe get an elevated temperature. But this was a crash for sure. So I reached out to Dr. Fox, you know, kind of asking him, you know, what do you do about this? And he connected me with Dr. Dodds, who is the number one person to talk to about this type of thing in the country. And I'm very grateful for that connection, for sure. And really, really looking forward to talking with Dr. Dodds in just a few minutes about the work that she's doing, not only in doing research to change the standard for how frequently we vaccinate animals, because the research that she's doing is accumulating enough data so that it's proven scientifically that rabies vaccines last 5 and even 7 years. And that we don't need to give certainly annual vaccines and even 3-year vaccines to help prevent the occurrence of this type of reaction, which does happen. And it can, I mean, in Remy's case, we weren't sure if she was going to survive through this. And she not only was, you know, taken out of the service dog program very abruptly and tragically, but, you know, we were not sure if she was even going to make it through this. And she is doing somewhat. She's doing a lot better, but she's definitely still compromised. And as I understand it, it can take several months really for a dog to come out of this if they do. So that's how I got connected with Dr. Dodds. I'm really thrilled to bring her on the show when we come back from break. So we'll be back in just a few minutes. You're listening to the Dog Talk Show on Alternative Talk 1150. Some treats. I'll scratch behind his ears. I'll shake hands with his feet. Your dog would run and greet me. He'd sit up and he'd beg. Then drool run out of his mouth and he'd start to hold my leg. You said, hi, this is Julie Forbes, your host of the Dog Talk Show and owner of Sensitive Dog, Dog Training and Behavior. Invisible Fence Northwest uses a balanced, gentle approach to help dogs learn their boundaries. I've seen it firsthand. They work with each person and pet as an individual and teach in a way that's fun and respectful. Your dog quickly learns it has freedom and fair boundaries, so is safe, happy, and secure. Isn't that what we all want for our dogs? Save $100 when you visit InvisibleFenceNW.com or call 800-800-FENCE and tell them you're a Dog Talk Show fan. They're there for the life of your pet.
Ever feel like strangling your boss?
You little!
Or maybe you're the boss and your employees make you want to strangle yourself. Drop that noose and tune in or call in to The Boss Show, Wednesdays at 5 p.m. on Alternative Talk 1150. Hosts Jim Hessler and Steve Motenko, co-owners of Path Forward Leadership Development, will take your calls on everything boss-related, offering deep insights with a dollop of outrageousness. The Boss Show, workplace wisdom with heart and humor, Wednesday afternoons at 5.
Looking for the perfect collar for your dog or cat, but all the stores have all the same selection? Can't find just the right bed to fit your home and your pet? Is your pup feeling chilly and wanting a coat to keep warm? Bido and Scratch is Seattle's perfectly balanced pet supply store, carrying everything you need to furnish and feed your cat or dog. They are located in Seattle's Mount Baker neighborhood, just around the corner from the new Mount Baker Light Rail Station on McClellan. For more information, contact the store at 206-588-2111 or friend Fido and Scratch on Facebook.
Do you have an injury, old or new, that won't heal? Are you fighting a cold or illness you can't kick? Do you feel like you've tried everything and are still struggling to find wellness and balance in your physical health? Have you been unimpressed with acupuncture in the past? For over a decade, Robert Meduzia has been making a difference for people who thought they had exhausted their options. Don't settle for pain and illness. Call 425-828-6190. That's 425-828-6190. Again, 425-828-6190. The Acupuncture and Sports Clinic of Kirkland. Heal faster, play longer.
The new mainstream of talk radio. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
You said the dog was here first. If you don't like it, you can leave.
Welcome back to the Dog Talk Show. I'm your host, Julie Forbes. You're listening to Alternative Talk, 1150 AM. And we are on with our guest today, Dr. Jean Dodds of Hemopet.org and RabiesChallengeTrust.org. Welcome to the show, Dr. Dodds.
Hi. It's actually RabiesChallengeFund.org.
Oh,
sorry.
Where did I get trust from?
Well, it's Charitable Trust is the full name, but But the website is rabieschallengefund.org.
Well, thank you.
That's okay.
Okay, so I've been researching you for hours, and you have so much going on. It's really, really impressive and wonderful. And I love all of the work that you're doing. Now, you have, and I told the kind of the backstory about Remy, the German Shepherd, and kind of how I got connected to you through Dr. Fox and got, made aware of all your work. Now, you are the founder of HemoPet.
That's correct.
And HemoPet is the blood bank, or is it the name, sort of the name for everything else that you've got going on as far as HemoLife and Thyroid Gold and NutriScan?
HemoPet is the parent company.
Okay.
The blood bank was the initial part of HemoPet. We're a nonprofit Red Cross for Animals that is a greyhound rescue and adoption as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so Pet Lifeline is the adoption arm of HemoPet. And people can go on our website and look at all of the dogs that we have for adoption under the Pet Lifeline portion. And mm-hmm. then we have the diagnostic program, as you mentioned, HemoLife. And we've been doing this for 20 years. And the diagnostic program has really been very, very active, mostly in the last 2 or 3 years.
Mm-hmm. And as far as the blood bank goes, now you use greyhounds through, I mean, you have this adoption, which is wonderful. I used to volunteer with X-Racing Greyhounds when I was in college. I just love the breed. But a lot of people don't know that greyhounds are universal blood donors. So tell us.
Actually, they're not.
They're not.
That's a misinformation, and I'm very glad you bring it up, Julie, not to embarrass you, but just to point out that there is a lot of misinformation out there.
Okay,
about 40% of greyhounds will have what we call universal donor blood type, which is like human O.
Uh-huh.
And but you've got to remember that most of the tracks where they come from, if they're available for adoption, are at risk for infectious disease.
Mm.
So they carry a lot of infectious diseases. So the first thing we do when we get our dogs from Texas, Oklahoma, and Arizona,
mm-hmm.
they're screened for infectious disease. And those that are positive have to be treated and sent out for, hopefully, other adoption programs.
Mm-hmm.
Of the ones that are left, we then blood type them. And so we probably only get between 8 to 12% of those dogs that are available because humanity didn't need them anymore.
Mm.
I make that advisedly because one of the reasons we chose greyhounds, in addition to their being short-haired and wonderful animals and easily adoptable, is to show human foibles in some sense, you know, using animals to make money or have prestige,
mm-hmm.
and then when you don't need them anymore, you discard them.
Mm-hmm. Recently, it was in the past couple years, I think, my home state, Massachusetts, banned greyhound racing, which I was really thrilled about. They put it on the ballot and said, can't do it in this state anymore. Which was great.
I think several New England states are like that now.
Yeah. So greyhounds are not universal blood donors as a breed.
That's correct.
And it's not just because of the infectious disease potential, but there are some greyhounds that just are a different blood type, like people.
Yeah. More than half.
And is the breed, is there a higher percentage within the breed that is universal compared to another breed?
Oh, it depends with the breed.
Okay.
Let me just clarify that. If you look at the standard mismatch at the most reactive red cell antigen in the dog, which is was called A and is now called DEA, or dog erythrocyte antigen,
mm-hmm.
it's about 40-60, so it's about the same.
Hmm.
40% negative and 60% positive. And you don't want the positive. You have to use the cells that don't have that protein on their surface because then it won't react,
mm.
whether animals have or don't have it.
Okay.
So it's about the same frequency, actually.
Huh. Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad I said that. So now HemoLife is, you're doing a lot of work around thyroid testing, and I haven't heard of autoimmune thyroiditis. I've heard of hypothyroidism, and this isn't hyperthyroid. This is something different. I've heard of Pleckner syndrome, which is altogether different, but not this autoimmune thyroiditis. Will you explain that?
Sure. The Pleckner syndrome is coined after Dr. Al Pleckner, who has retired and has come back again, but there was never any scientific validity to that syndrome. Mm-hmm. But what it's most akin to, in his defense, is adrenal exhaustion syndrome,
okay.
where people or animals have an acute stress to their lives, physically, emotionally, physiologically, and their adrenal glands are exhausted temporarily. And that shuts down everything, including the thyroid.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a temporary syndrome.
Okay.
Autoimmune thyroiditis is the most common cause of thyroid disease in humans and animals. It's heritable, so the trait is passed on from one generation to the next, and it eventually leads to hypothyroidism. So the most common thing we could equate it to would be diabetes, which runs in families and destroys the pancreas and the control of our glucose metabolism.
Mm-hmm.
And this process in genetically susceptible individuals destroys their thyroid gland progressively in about a year to a year and a half from the beginning to the end.
Mm.
And when about 70% of the thyroid gland is destroyed, but not less than that, Julie,
mm-hmm.
they show classical signs of hypothyroidism.
Mm.
And so the problem is that many veterinarians don't see these cases to diagnose them early enough. In other words, we wait until more than 70% of the thyroid gland is gone before we see what we expect to see, and then that animal's been living with a behavioral problem, a skin problem, an allergy problem, a leaky gut, you know, or whatever, mm-hmm. chronic urinary tract infections or ear infections or skin infections for a year before somebody finally realizes that what the cause was.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to diagnose it earlier. We don't breed the ones that are positive for this disease.
Mm.
And, of course, we treat them so that they can live a healthy life.
Mm-hmm.
And just for your listeners' information, on April the 5th, my first book will be printed, co-authored with the dog writer Diana Lavradura. It's mm-hmm. on Amazon.com already, but it's not available yet.
Mm.
And it's called The Canine Thyroid Epidemic. And it's designed exactly for pet owners. And also, if they want to be shared with their veterinarian, because it has all the documentation to back up, you know, what we say. We explain it all. We tell them why it can be misleading. We talk about the effect of diets and toxins and vaccines and, you know, drugs, et cetera. And also, we have case studies, which are amusing, that tell us about stories that many, many readers will say, ooh, that sounds just like my dog.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully, and I'm not trying to plug the book in a financial sense, because you know authors never make any money. It's just to get the word out after 20 years of doing something different, because we're the only laboratory that now runs our own diagnostic thyroid program through Hemolife.
Mm-hmm.
It uses no radioisotopes, so we're the only green technology in the world on this these assays.
Mm-hmm.
It's patented, and The whole system, then, is age and breed-specific interpretive comments, which I've been collecting and doing for about 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
So we're the only veterinary diagnostic lab that does age-specific and breed-specific interpretations, and we also take the activity of the animal into account, if it's an athlete versus a couch potato.
Mm-hmm.
So that narrows the diagnostic so that it's much more specific for an individual pet, rather than having a veterinarian scratch his or her head trying to determine where this dog should be in the broad normal range that the laboratories typically print out.
Yeah, and this test is different. Can you explain the difference between kind of the standard testing that has been versus the test that you've developed?
Right. Well, part of the problem, especially in our recession, that most veterinarians have been told that a annual wellness exam or a first look exam on an ill pet should consider a CBC, a blood count, the serum chemistry profile, mm-hmm. a urinalysis, and a T4 test, which is one test of thyroid function.
Mm-hmm.
That is so misleading and has caused so many heartaches and problems.
Hmm.
Because the T4 not only measures hypothyroidism, it also is affected by any other problem in the body and certain drugs like steroid use, like anticonvulsant phenobarbital, like sulfonamide antibiotics, will reduce that level, and the dog may not be hypothyroid at all.
Mm.
So if you just do a T4, we overdiagnose the disease, and then we put animals on treatment that they don't necessarily need.
Mm.
So the profile we do is actually akin to some of the completely comprehensive profiles that laboratories like Michigan State offer or larger commercial labs like Antech or IDEX. But we specifically have selected the 5 tests that are the most useful, discarded commonly using those that are not helpful because it costs more money for the client,
mm-hmm.
and also we don't have any isotopes to contaminate the environment. So that's what's unique about the Hemolife Thyroid 5 profile. And then we have smaller profiles, 4 and 2, for follow-ups, depending on what the original test showed and what's appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
We're trying to do what the veterinarian needs and also take into account the pocketbook of the client. And we're a nonprofit, so our prices are significantly lower than those of the commercial laboratories.
Mm-hmm. And again, for people that are just tuning in, we're talking with Dr. Gene Dodds of hemopet.org and rabieschallengefund.org. And you've been talking about your thyroid testing and the difference between what has been standardly used and what you've developed. And I also, when we come back from break, I want to talk with you more about this specifically, but specifically about, is this something that is going to be or is now taught in vet schools? Is this something that most vets know about now? So we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back with Dr. Gene Dodds. You're listening to The Dog Talk Show on Alternative Talk 1150.
Got a nose that can smell a two-day trail. He's a four-legged tracking machine.
For more than 25 years, All the Best Pet Care has been helping people choose the best foods, treats, and toys for their dogs and cats. They are a locally owned family business bringing about little miracles every day by following the Mother Nature model of nutrition. Stop by to meet their adoption cats, schedule an anesthesia-free dental cleaning, or bring your dog to the toy testing area. Their new Edmunds store, next to the PCC Natural Market, opens in late February. To learn more, go to allthebestpetcare.com or follow them on Facebook.
This is Martha Norwalk. Every Sunday morning, beginning at 9 a.m., thanks in part to Jones & Company Pets in Marysville, we cover the world of living successfully with your animal friends. This week, it's Vet Sunday, and Dr. Bill Burlingame is back. Dr. Bill's a terrific, open-minded vet, and he now has years of experience diagnosing and treating the Pluckner Endocrine Immune Imbalance Syndrome. So whatever medical issues your animals have, he can handle it. Plan to give us a call on Martha Norwalk's Animal World Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
Let Hot Portraiture paint your dog in a stylish, abstract, realistic style. Artist Jennifer Bloom captures the personality of any canine, big or small, mutt or purebred. You can even include yourself in the painting, and you're sure to love the end result. To find out more, visit hotportraiture.net. That's H-A-U-T-E, portraiture.net. Or call Jennifer at 206-661-4538.
Camley Electric Incorporated is a full-service electrical contractor. From simple home repairs to full remodels, new construction, and small commercial projects, our qualified electricians do it all. We pride ourselves on our workmanship and professional standards, delivered with value in mind. Located in historic Ballard, Camley Electric serves the greater Seattle metropolitan area. Licensed, bonded, and insured. Camley Electric welcomes all inquiries about your electrical needs. Visit the website KemleyElectric.com. That's K-E-M-L-Y Electric.com.
Radio for your body, mind, and spirit. Alternative Talk, 1150.
Four-legged tracking machine.
Welcome back to the Dog Talk Show. I'm your host, Julie Forbes, and we are back with Dr. Gene Dodds. Welcome back.
Hi.
So we were talking about HemoLife and as the diagnostic division of HemoPet, providing the most comprehensive diagnosis profiles for the detecting and interpreting autoimmune thyroiditis and hypothyroidism. You're talking about the Thyroid 5 profile that you have developed and all of the benefits of that compared to what is the standard, which is not... is very compromised. And one thing you were saying, that the T4 test that is typically used or has been typically used measures hypothyroid, but it's also affected by a lot of other things. So can you just explain a little bit more about what that means? Like someone gets their dog's thyroid panel done, and how can those results be misinterpreted or false?
Sure. Actually, the dog and the cat are quite different there. The cat has hyperthyroidism, per being high and po being low.
Mm-hmm.
And cats do that when they get older. They can have hyperthyroidism. And if you just screen the T4, it'll read lower than it actually is. And so you can miss the diagnosis because it'll fall within the upper end of the normal range.
Mm-hmm.
by contrast, in the dog, if they're hypothyroid, it can look really low. But it can be misleading if the dog has some other disease, if it isn't right at the time, if it's got an adrenal problem or a liver problem or a you-name-it problem. The T4 level can be suppressed below the lower limit of the normal range. And so the veterinarian could be diagnosing hypothyroidism, putting an animal on therapy, which is A, not indicated, and B, of course, costs money, mm-hmm. and C, could be harmful if you're ramping up a dog's low T4 when the real reason is, God forbid, cancer.
Mm.
You would be aggravating the growth of those cells.
Mm.
So you really need to know what you're doing. And most laboratories now, you do this CBC chemistry profile T4, and the T4 comes back low, and the print below it says, oh, to be sure, you need to add on another test.
Mm.
Well, crumb.
Right.
Some people in our profession are quite angry that this is just a marketing tool to get a more comprehensive thyroid profile done, especially when the T4 alone today is often run on an autoanalyzer rather than separately as a hormone assay. And those tend to read low anyway.
Mm.
So we have all of these issues of laboratory quality control and what's appropriate to make a diagnosis.
Mm.
So the most of the things that happen is the veterinarian would call back in and add on what's called a free T4. And the whole industry has bought into this idea that it has to be done by one method called equilibrium dialysis, and that this method is much more accurate than the other one. Well, guess what? Neither one of them are good enough. So it doesn't make any difference. And people don't know that the equilibrium dialysis method is the same radioimmunoassay that's done without dialysis. So it's the same test where they theoretically dialyze away or remove contaminants that could affect the test. Well, guess what? Seeing the reproducibility and accuracy of the regular assay or the dialyzed assay is about 56% in the dog and about 60% in the cat. Neither one of them are considered accurate enough for proper clinical pathology sensitivity and specificity.
Mm-hmm.
So they're just no good. And you can't blame the profession or the labs for that, because until recently, until the tests like the ones we use, which are trade secrets, mm-hmm. nobody could really do it accurately. So
mm-hmm.
they were doing the best they could by taking human assays and trying to adapt them for other species,
yeah.
which is always fraught with problems.
Yeah. And now you've been talking about your testing and the Thyroid 5 profile and how it fills in all of these holes and does things differently, and your patented green technology, which has never been offered before in veterinary medicine. So you've got all this really amazing information. You've got a book coming out April 5th, The Canine Thyroid Epidemic. Now, is this information in vet schools?
No, it's not.
Shocking.
Well, it's a little shocking, but you have to remember that there aren't very many veterinary endocrinology experts at veterinary schools. Michigan State University, for example, is considered by many to be the gold standard for a variety of diagnostics, including their thyroid endocrine lab. And Dr. Raymond Nachreiner, my colleague who started that work then, is about to retire, and he has a huge group and many, many veterinarians who realize they were not trained properly and that their veterinary colleges don't treat this properly go to Michigan State.
Mm-hmm.
And they're using radioimmunoassays still, but their results are spot on.
Mm.
And they often will recommend a full panel like we do.
Mm-hmm.
The only difficulty, or difference I should say, not difficulty, with the Michigan State profile is they don't interpret the results based on the age, the breed, and the activity level of the patient.
Mm-hmm.
So when some owners want veterinarians to send us samples, and they prefer to use Michigan because they always have, what ends up happening is the owner then sends us the Michigan results so we can interpret them, in light of the age and the breed. So.
Mm.
There's this huge database they have, and for some reason they've chosen not to do that, which is, to me, extremely frustrating. So
mm-hmm.
we're standing out there, and we're telling people this is how it has to be done. And many of the boarded endocrinologists that are in the private sector know very well what we're doing and practice what we're doing and teach what we're doing. But it has to trickle down to the academic environment. And you may have it right in one or two veterinary schools because there are experts who understand it and will do it like Dr. Charles Capon at Ohio State, but he passed away.
Mm.
So they don't have the endocrinologist of his stature and knowledge and scientific integrity because he's not there anymore.
Mm-hmm.
We have other endocrinology people, which I'd rather not speak about particular people.
Sure.
So even if you had a handful, it's not done correctly. And
yeah.
So this is a slow educational process, but the way it works, Julie, is you have to start by teaching the people that need the service, which is the client or the pet, either for screening, for breeding, or healthy animal wellness tests, or an ill animal, and their veterinarian. And it's working so well.
Yeah.
And we've only been doing this for a little over 2 years. So, you know, we're gathering steam rapidly.
Yeah.
And we do it internationally. We're doing most of the testing in New Zealand, a lot of it in Australia, a lot of it in England now.
And you
so
had,
it works.
You had made a great point, too. What a great thing for someone to do once the book is out, The Canine Thyroid Epidemic, is to buy a copy and get a, you know, an extra copy for each veterinarian that you visit. You know, maybe it's just one, and give your veterinarian a copy of the book. And,
so they can understand it.
Right.
And there's an entire chapter about the laboratory values, explaining how we interpret them based on the age and the breed and whatever. And my husband says, why are you giving away this information that you've developed for 20 years? I said, why not? Why not share it with the world? I mean, there's no point in me going to the next life and not being able to share my experience.
Yeah.
So I want everybody to be able to do it like we do it. It would be great.
Yeah. And ultimately, it's about the, you know, protecting pets and helping pets as best we can. And I'm going to switch gears and talk about the Rabies Challenge Fund. And this was how we got connected, was due to one of our dogs, a service dog candidate, having a what would you call it, a case of rabies vaccinosis?
Correct.
And she had a very severe reaction to a rabies vaccine shortly after she had the vaccine. She spiked a very high fever, and she has been compromised ever since. And I'll, you know, let you know an update that she is actually doing a lot better. But she's still compromised, and mainly we can still tell that her the coordination and strength of her back end is still not what it was. But otherwise, she's doing a lot better, and she is now off the steroids. So,
good. And have we detoxed her several times for rabies?
Detoxed her?
Detoxed her for the rabies miasm, which is the molecular energy of the rabies virus?
No, we haven't.
Okay.
So
this is done with oral homeopathics, and they can be used continuously.
We did.
Or intermittently. You did do that.
I think so, yes. We were doing homeopathics. Darcy, this is a dog that's...
Yes.
Yeah, so she's nodding to me in the sound booth that we
good,
did.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Well, you know, if you're not satisfied, you can always do another course of that.
Okay.
It's not harmful to do. It doesn't matter how many months out you are.
Okay. So let's talk about the, you know, the rabies vaccine. You're doing this wonderful work and researching to change the requirement from either annually or every 3 years to 5 or preferably 7 years between vaccines.
Correct. Now, there are no states that require annual vaccines anymore, thank God.
Good.
Partly due to the really big efforts of my co-trustee of the Rabies Challenge Fund, which is Chris Christine in Maine. And there are some states now that leave it optional, but every state now has the ability to have a 3-year vaccine after the first 2 doses have been given. So every dog has to have 2 doses within the first 12 months. And that's because when they did these studies years ago, they realized that not all dogs actually developed antibodies from just one vaccine. So they had to have 2 because, remember, we're protecting the public health primarily.
Right.
Not that public health people officially care about the animals. They're trying to protect us.
Right.
I say that ruefully. But anyway, so then it would be every 3. And the purpose of the Rabies Challenge Fund, because we know these vaccines have much longer shelf span and protection than 3 years, is to do a 5- and 7-year concurrent trial. And we're in the 4th year, actually 4.5 years now into the first 5. And at the end of the 5, we'll be following the USDA guidelines to show that the vaccine was efficacious for 5 years, and then get this new vaccine licensed for 5 years, which will mean that we hope all veterinarians, with the owner's encouragement, will use that so that the boosters are only given every 5 years after that. So after your 1-year second booster, you then would have a 5-year following that, and then another 5-year, you know. But maybe by then we'll have the 7-year done, and then hopefully the dog would only need one booster in midlife, and then not when they're old and debilitated.
Right.
So, in
your work, are you using? Is the idea once you get this, you know, passed into the next phase, where it's like, okay, now it's every 5 years or 7 years? Will they be using the same vaccine that they've been using, or is this a like reformulated vaccine?
I do not know which company made it, and I specifically have told Dr. Schultz, who's doing the studies for us in Wisconsin, that I did not want to know the name of the vaccine, because then when people asked me, I would feel compelled to tell them because I wouldn't, you know, tell a fib.
Right.
So I said, don't tell me, but I will tell you this is the vaccine that the federal government suggested we use.
Okay.
So that's an encouraging sign.
Mm-hmm.
And there's one other very important benefit of this study. There are no data in the published literature to tell you what a protective rabies titer is in the dog. We only have what we know for humans from the Centers for Disease Control.
Mm-hmm.
And so we extrapolate the titers in dogs and cats, for example, to what we know will protect a person because of this issue of protecting the public health.
Uh-huh.
But what we will know now, once the 5 and 7 year studies are done, what is actually protective, because Dr. Schultz has been taking periodic blood samples from the test animals.
Mm-hmm.
So that we can determine, because we assume they'll all survive, absolutely, that we'll know then what the titers were that allowed them to survive. And then we'll know that, hopefully, for extenuating circumstances in certain cases, that a rabies titer alone will be sufficient as a waiver.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, I'm going to ask you to explain more to our listeners what is a titer. And also that it's something that they can have done now to prove that their dog doesn't necessarily need the vaccine. We'll be back in just a few minutes with the Dog Talk Show on Alternative Talk 1150.
Who let the dogs out?
This is Julie Forbes, your host of the Dog Talk Show. If you've been listening, you already know how I feel about Invisible Fence Northwest and their safety solutions for dogs. But get this, they help cats too. They tell me they've helped thousands of felines enjoy safe freedom outdoors or can keep them safe inside. They also have gentle ways to create a dog-free zone for your cat, so your dog will stay away from your cat's food and litter box. Visit InvisibleFenceNW.com or call 800-800-FENCE and tell them you want the Dog Talk Show discount.
The Natural Pet Pantry offers everything you need for feeding your pet a raw food diet. Most health issues pets face today are a result of poor diet. The Natural Pet Pantry makes raw, cooked, and custom meals for your pets, all prepared locally using only grade A meats and vegetables. Located in stores around the Puget Sound, the home delivery is available from Stanwood to Gig Harbor. Visit naturalpetpantry.com or call 206-248-1079. For more information on how to add health and longevity to your beloved pet's life, that's naturalpetpantry.com.
This is Kim Ariano. Join me on Wednesdays at 4 o'clock for Walk the Talk with Kim. We will focus on nonprofit and community organizations to strengthen our community through knowledge, leadership, and collaboration. We will challenge our listeners to walk the talk and take action to support the health and growth of our nonprofit community. You will be inspired with stories of triumph and lessons in leadership. So put on your walking shoes, grab your brain, and let's walk the talk with Kim. Every Wednesday at 4 p.m. right here on Alternative Talk 1150.
This is Julie Forbes, dog training, behavior, and nutrition specialist, and owner of Sensitive Dog, thoughtful guidance for you and your dog. If your dog needs basic obedience training, a behavior evaluation, or food consultation, I can help you. Call me at 206-372-7399 or visit my website, www.sensitivedog.com. I teach group obedience classes, in-home lessons, and evaluations, and a 2-week intensive training program called Higher Education. Again, I'm Julie Forbes, Seattle's dog behavior training and nutrition specialist. www.sensitivedog.com.
Alternative Talk 1150 is on the interwebs. Dial us up at 1150kknw.com.
Welcome back to the Dog Talk Show. I'm your host, Julie Forbes. You're listening to Alternative Talk 1150 AM, and we are back talking with Dr. Jean Dodds. Welcome back.
Hi.
So we were talking about thyroid and all of your work there, and then we switched gears, and now we're talking about rabies vaccines and rabies vaccinosis. And I want to kind of back up a little bit and ask you to explain, one, that, you know, why do we need to pay attention to how much we're vaccinating and the dangers of that, and also about blood titer tests and why we might want to have our pets' blood titered to see if they even need the vaccine, because a lot of people don't even know that there's dangers in vaccination.
Correct. Well, one of the first problems, and I think people are more aware now, Julie, because of the autism measles vaccine issue, and, you know, Jenny McCarthy and that chap in England who's been pilloried for, never mind, Andrew Wakefield. And so people are more aware, and there are more and more articles about vaccine issues for humans in women's magazines, et cetera. Well, the same thing is always applied to animals. And, of course, animals get many more vaccines than humans ever do. And they've been getting more and more and more since the 50s. And Dr. Ron Schultz at the University of Wisconsin, who's a preeminent authority worldwide on the subject, and myself, have been teaching this for 35 years, more than that. And we laugh and we say there's so many arrows in our back from what we were talking, because nobody wanted the message we were delivering, that now they're listening because there's no place for more arrows. The arrows are going around the back now and hitting somebody else. God forbid. Anyway, it was quite clear that when animals were being vaccinated, that within a short period after the vaccination, they would have an adverse reaction. They would change their behavior or destroy their blood cells or damage their liver or damage their kidneys or start seizuring. Now, we're not talking about anaphylaxis now, which, you know, is the per-acute reaction like a food allergy or whatever. That, that occurs immediately. We're talking about a delayed reaction that it can occur from, say, 3 days to 30, even 45 days after vaccination, but typically peaks at about day 7 to day 21. And within that period, especially if you've given a modified live vaccine, which means one that has only been changed a little bit in tissue culture and will multiply in the animal it's been injected into. And so the animal gets a certain amount of the antigen of the vaccine, and it's usually a combo, so it would be 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 things at the same time. And it multiplies to 20 times that within a week to 10 days. And so what typically happens then is the animal's immune system says, forget it, I can't contain all of this antigen. There's too many things attacking my body now, and so you see reactions. And if the public understood how that works, it makes more sense. So why do rabies vaccines, seeing all rabies vaccines are killed, they do not multiply, they cannot multiply, there never have been any modified live rabies vaccines for 40 years. Anyway, they are so strong because we're trying to elicit immunity against this fatal disease. So the rabies vaccine has neurogenic protein, meaning it can affect the brain. It's very, very strong, and it has chemicals to make the vaccine work better, to cause an even stronger reaction. So that's why you see modified live virus vaccines, which are nearly most other, you know, important vaccines of that kind, and then the rabies. So what do? We have all these reactions that occur that the public are not aware of because vaccines are not distilled water. They're full of material intended to stimulate the immune system. The question is whether the animal or person that receives the vaccine's immune system can handle this onslaught injected. Remember, you're not giving it orally, you're injecting it. And so once it's in there, you can't take it away. So what do as alternatives? Well, once a puppy or a kitten has had the appropriate puppy-kitten series of vaccines, which is not too many, spaced appropriately apart, then we can do another vaccine perhaps a year later when they're adults. Then after that, we can take a blood sample. And this is called a titer, T-I-T-E-R test. What the titer does is it measures the amount of antibody against that vaccine in the blood. And if it's high enough, the animal doesn't need to be vaccinated. Say, well, gosh, that's going to be expensive. Well, some veterinarians don't want to do it, and they'll charge $250. The typical vaccine titer costs between $40 and $50, typically, maybe $40 and $60. And that's more than a vaccine cost, but it's much safer for the animal if they don't need it. Well, how many animals have good titers, Dr. Dodds, after they're vaccinated properly? 98%.
Ah!
How about that? And we know from challenge survival studies that most of the distemper parvo, for example, hepatitis vaccines last a minimum of 9 years, mostly for lifelong.
So 98% of dogs, did you say dogs or dogs and cats?
Dogs and cats.
actually titer four, so meaning that they actually don't need the vaccine again.
It varies a little bit, but it's between 96 and 98%. And those are data that I published in the year 2000, which is the largest titer study, this is for the dog, ever done. Mm. And then Colorado State did a huge study in the cat. So it's quite clear that, and the policies of the National Veterinary Association say not to over-vaccinate. You have to inform the client about the risks and benefits of vaccines. You can consider titers as an alternative. Mm-hmm. You should try to not give all the antigens together at the same time because the reactions are going to be greater. Smaller dogs will react more more likely than larger dogs because they're getting a whole dose and they're smaller.
Right.
All of these things are published.
So here's a question I asked before. Now, is this information... No, I know that you're still in the research phase with the Rabies Challenge Fund, but getting this information so that it's being taught to the new generations of vets in vet schools so that it becomes more of the standard rather than something
Correct.
Where you're trying to actually change the momentum, like get the wheel turning the other direction. And do you anticipate, or how much of a factor do you anticipate being met this information?
You mean resistance versus compliance?
Well, resistance specifically due to the fact that this is a huge industry that makes a lot of money.
Right.
So like, oh, well, okay, so we're not doing vaccines every 3 years. Now we're doing them every 5 or even 7 years. That's a big hit.
Yep. That's why the industry wasn't asked to sponsor the Rabies Challenge Fund. It's entirely... funded by public donations from private individuals or kennel clubs.
Mm-hmm.
Also from people who have willed their estates to us. We recently got a $60,000 estate benefit from a friend in Australia.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, it's incredible. So we did not expect industry to support it. We didn't ask them to support it.
Right.
This is a grassroots effort.
Yeah. And really, just like with what we were talking about with the thyroid, it starts, and this has been my experience with food-related things as well, is that it's about educating the pet owners.
Right.
And, you know, educating people so that people are talking to their vets in the vet offices so that more and more people are requesting the titer tests
right.
as an alternative, especially, oh my gosh, I mean, 96 to 98%, that's huge.
I know.
And then, you know, us with this, you know, personally, this hits really close to home because we have a gorgeous, beautiful, wonderfully temperamented German Shepherd at home that could have died as a result of this. She had 105-degree fever as a result of her rabies vaccine.
Right.
And it's just like, oh, and to think that, I mean, we were doing what we're supposed to do and all this, but it was like, you know, now... She's taught us, and what we do now is we titer before we vaccinate.
Right.
So that's good, and here we are talking, which is also good. But
the bottom line is, if their veterinarian pushes the vaccine, will not do a titer, or says they're too expensive, you need to leave the practice, thank them very much, and find another veterinarian.
Right. Yep. So just to kind of recap your information, and I've got links to all of Dr. Dodd's websites. I'll post the title of your book as well. The Canine Thyroid Epidemic is the title of your book that's coming out April 5th. You can order that on Amazon.com. Your websites, hemopet.org, also rabieschallengefund.org. There's a place on the website that you can donate to support. There's also a DVD that I ordered, which I'm really excited about. I ordered it this morning, 2010 Safer Pet Vaccination Seminar DVD that also comes with a bunch of articles or studies that you've written. Tell
right.
us a little bit about that, and that's also a way to support the efforts.
Okay, that was a seminar that Ron Schultz and I did for... pet owners, for breeders, for veterinarians and scientists in March of 2010.
Mm-hmm.
And it was sponsored by Jan Rasmussen and her dog, Chicklet,
mm-hmm.
that had a vaccine reaction.
Mm.
Chicklet passed recently, by the way, as an older dog.
Mm-hmm.
But Jan Rasmussen and her friends, supporters of the Rabies Challenge Fund, hosted the seminar. And we had an auction, and the proceeds were donated, and the DVD is part of that. And we definitely encourage people to have it because it's really very helpful in explaining what we were talking about today.
Mm. So if you want to order that DVD, you can go to rabieschallengefund.org. Again, I've got all this information posted on the Dog Talk Show homepage. You can order that DVD. It comes with a 57-page program guide with articles by Dr. Dodds and Dr. Schultz, plus a free year subscription to Dogs Naturally magazine online. And Dr. Dodds, we are out of time today. I knew we had a lot to talk about on the show. Thank you so much for the work that you're doing and for your time today sharing about what you do. And I really look forward to the book and having you back on the show.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. We'll be back next week. We're going to replay one of my favorite interviews with Dr. Michael Fox. Thanks for listening to the Dog Talk Show on Alternative Talk 1150.